Welcome to the Soft Verbal Podcast, presented by Dead Soxy, hosted by RebelGrove.com publisher Neil McCready, and featuring RebelGrove.com and Rivals.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast is your number one podcast dedicated to Ole Miss football and basketball recruiting.
Caution, you are about to enter the no-spin zone.
Featuring guests from throughout the Rivals.com network, the Soft Verbal Podcast tells you what is happening and what's going to happen on the recruiting trail, and it does it in style. Just like Dead Soxy.
I'm better looking than you.
Visit DeadSoxy.com and enter Rebel Grove at checkout for 25% off your order of the best dress socks you'll ever wear. Now here's your host, Neil McCready.
Welcome into another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Dead Soxy. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on this show, we talk college basketball recruiting, a lot of Ole Miss basketball recruiting with Corey Evans. He is a national basketball recruiting analyst for Rivals.com. We catch him in Atlanta. He's there for some of the McDonald's All-American events. So he took some time out of his busy Wednesday to visit with us. You'll hear it today. A little bit of a note before we get started. In that interview with Corey, we talked about the Alabama job. It was a couple hours before the news broke that Alabama had hired Buffalo coach Nate Oates. So keep that in mind when you hear his answer to a couple of the questions about some of the coaching vacancies in the SEC. Before we get to that interview with Corey, let me tell you about Dead Soxy. Warm weather's here. It's on the horizon. With it comes the inevitable debate of sock or no sock with your loafers. So save your feet and your shoes from making their own impression and step into spring with some no-shows from Dead Soxy. You really need to experience the difference a quality sock makes. It's the first step in dressing for the job you want and not the job you have. So go to deadsoxy.com, enter the code REBELGROVE at checkout to receive 30% off all orders, including sale items. These no-shows are the same quality you already love and enjoy with their traditional dress socks. And again, they come with Dead Soxy's no-slip guarantee. So go to deadsoxy.com, check out their no-show collection, and remember to enter promo code REBELGROVE at checkout for 30% off all orders. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call the number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, what Ford you're interested in. Listen, even if you don't know for sure that you're in the market for a vehicle, even if you're not positive that you want to go with a Ford, give Corey a call. Get a quote. That quote, at the very least, is going to give you a baseline moving forward, and it just might do for you what it did for me and pique your interest enough to get you to explore a Ford further, which is what I did, and I'm in a Ford now. You will be, too, after you deal with Corey. He wants to be your truck guy. He wants to be your car guy. So give him a chance. 662-257-1900. They have great service after the sale, delivery options, pretty much everything you could want in a car dealer. Corey Clark and the people at Clark Ford are every bit of that. So without further ado, let's go to Corey Evans of Rivals.com. Enjoy. All right, Corey, really appreciate you taking some time on what I know is a really busy day and time for you. I'll start with this. When I talked to you, I was guest hosting the Gary Parrish Show, and we were mostly talking Memphis, but I asked you about Ole Miss back in the early portion of the season, and it was long before any of us saw what was coming with Ole Miss, having a pretty good run in the SEC, 10-8 in the league, make the NCAA tournament, losing the first round to Oklahoma. How much has the immediate success that Kermit Davis had impacted the way that maybe Ole Miss is viewed on the recruiting trail and, in your eyes, sort of the arc of the program?
Yeah, you know, there wasn't really the expectations here early on. I mean, weren't too promising or weren't too extensive. You know, I know that Kermit overtook a program with a pretty solid backcourt with guys like Terrence Davis and Devontae Schuller and guys like that. But to take them to the NCAA tournament as a, you know, an 8 seed, I believe it was, definitely opened your eyes. Everyone's eyes to what he can both do in the recruiting box, but also or in the coach's box, and also recruiting-wise, already getting a guy like Blake Henson last year and reclassifying him. And, you know, and without Blake, who was an integral member of that team, who knows where they were. So I think it's definitely they've taken a giant, giant step forward during a time that many did not expect that as such. And, you know, they're definitely trending upward, that's for sure.
Kind of talking to people around the program, close to the program, it certainly sounds like Jamin Brakefield, the four-star, I guess 3/4 at Huntington, that he's kind of 50-50 about whether he's going to reclassify. Obviously that's the first step in getting him on any campus, Ole Miss included, is you got to get him to reclassify. What do you hear there? What's sort of your opinion on what will happen?
Yeah, I think you're pretty accurate there. I think it's about a 50-50 chance right now. It's all about, you know, getting the proper academics in line. You know, Jamin's planning on playing travel basketball this spring and summer with a program called Phenom Universe back up in Wisconsin, where he actually was born. You know, I think I could see it working out that he reclassifies. Am I confident in that? No. But I think if he does reclassify, I think Ole Miss could be definitely the landing spot for him. But a guy like that late in the ball game, with how talented he is and the dearth of quality forwards available, it's not going to come easy, that's for sure.
You've seen him play. Break down his game. How, in terms of, let's just say that, you know, this time a year from now, he's at a D1 school, at a Power 5 school. What does his game look like at this next level?
You know, he's a very skilled, smooth, fluid, 6'8", lefty forward. Fits that quote-unquote small ball four-man role. Not a tremendous athlete, more of a throwback type of forward. You know, not a limited athlete, just not an explosive one, but has a great IQ for the game, can play multiple spots on both ends of the floor, plays the game the right way, if that makes kind of sense, you know, but good teammate, good IQ, like I said. I just think he's a winner.
The other big name, if you hang around Ole Miss circles very long, that comes up repeatedly is Kadeem Sy, who at one point it looked like the former Virginia Tech forward / center, more of a forward than a center, in my opinion. You might disagree. There was a lot of talk about LSU early in the year. Obviously, that situation in Baton Rouge is volatile. That's probably putting it mildly. Ole Miss, the confidence around their program about size certainly has shot up here in the last few days. What do you hear about him? And then what kind of an impact could he have on a program like Ole Miss if he landed there?
Yeah, Kadeem, his recruitment's been difficult to come by in regards to finding out credible information with. You know, I've heard in recent weeks it was Texas Tech, Arkansas, Pitt, LSU. Of course, the coaching change at Arkansas changes things. What's going on down at LSU changes some things as well. But I do think Ole Miss is in a very, very good spot there. I think he'll take some visits here in the coming weeks. Like most junior college guys, they kind of get put in the back burner a little bit. You know, most high or high major programs, they go all for, you know, the top of the line high school guy, then they look more towards the junior college guys this time of the year. But I think Ole Miss is right there. If they can attain a guy like Kadeem's super, super talented. I mean, he was a guy that started out at Virginia Tech, was a productive member of that team 2 years ago, down in junior college now, down in Florida, I believe it is, and really expanded his game. I mean, he's making jump shots to the perimeter. He's gotten more athletic. You know, if he was a high school guy now, I mean, he'd be a top 65, top 60 guy. I mean, I've even had some NBA scouts bring his name up with me. So he's definitely trending in the right direction. And he would be a day one producer, I think, at Ole Miss.
Yeah, he's a difference maker. He's kind of that rim protector that Kermit Davis didn't have this past season. I mean, they had a couple of bigs who at times were serviceable, but they never had anybody who could truly impact the game close to the basket on either end of the floor, really, at all. It's the part of the fact that they made the NCAA tournament with that group is
impressive, right?
It's actually kind of fascinating, really, that in a league as good as the SEC, that with no post presence whatsoever, really, that they were able to get it done. I'll be honest, man. I mean, I covered the whole season, and I'm still sort of baffled. I told somebody on the staff, I said, well, I guess I should eat crow. I picked you 13th, and he kind of laughed, and I said, I'll be honest. I came closer to picking you 14th than I did 12th. And still to this moment, I look at it and think, yeah, I'm not all that embarrassed of my pick because I just didn't think they could guard anybody in the blocks, and they really couldn't, which if you're an Ole Miss fan, it probably is exciting to think what that program could be when they got guys who could guard people in the close to the basket.
No, entirely. I mean, and you might be, saying that, hey, I messed that one up. But even if you told Kermit, hey, you're going to be an eighth seed, you're wearing the white jersey NCAA tournament first round, and you told him that in September, I think he would take that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think if he's being perfectly honest, he wouldn't have believed you. You mentioned some of the coaching changes. One of them is at Vanderbilt. This question might catch you a little off guard, and if it does, I apologize, but you're probably familiar with the kid. Bryce Drew's out at Vanderbilt. That's created a lot of speculation around here about Austin Crowley, who has not yet been officially released at Vanderbilt, best I can tell, but I don't think there's any question that he wants out and probably will eventually get out. What do you know about him as a player in terms of how ready to contribute he is for wherever he ends up, whether it's Vanderbilt or Ole Miss or wherever?
Yeah, he's like this miscellaneous utility glue guy right now that can develop into a primary or secondary scorer at the next level. He's spent time on the Nike YBL circuit, was a catalyst for the nationally relevant, nationally ranked Sunrise Christian Academy program this past winter. So he's been there, done that, had great success at the highest of levels. Doesn't do anything great, but also one of those guys that there is no primary hole within his game. So he's the kind of guy that, as a freshman, at the high major level, can come in and kind of plug a variety of holes that might be there for the taking. So he's a high intangible guy, high energy guy, 6'4", 6'5", rangy, athletic wing, decent shooter, decent ball handler, valuable defender. He just masks a number of holes or weaknesses on whatever team he's on.
You're around a lot of these coaches. When you're just talking kind of on background, off the record, that kind of thing, not asking you to reveal anything specific, how much transfer market talk is there? I mean, everybody's kind of – it's one of those things where it sounds like every school in the country is not only active in the transfer market, but it has become – an integral part of their program building.
That's what it is, man. I mean, that's what it is today. It's no more of let's complete our roster with maybe a transfer. It's 1 + 1 = 2. One of those numbers is the high school level, and the other one is the transfer level. And it's no longer a complimentary piece to your roster. It's super, super important and vital that you hit the transfer wire pretty hard, whether it's the sit-out guys, the grad transfers that bring experience and maturity to your roster, whatever it might be. This is the new age that we're in college basketball recruiting, and if the coaches don't keep up with it, they're going to be left behind.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. Like, I've been kind of following a few people on Twitter just to kind of watch what gets liked, what gets followed, and not just at Ole Miss, but at multiple programs, just to kind of cross-reference. And it's just following that alone, not even talking to anybody. It's incredible how active it is. I want to ask you about one more guy in this class, a couple of guys in the next class, and then I'm going to get just a little big picture thought, then I'm going to let you go. I appreciate your time so much. Sean McNeil, a JUCO player from Sinclair. I keep hearing it's down to Ole Miss and West Virginia. I know that The JUCO area is not where you put the majority of your focus, but what do you hear about him, if anything? What kind of player is he? Where do you think he might end up?
Yeah, you know, so Sean's from Cincinnati, and, you know, he's you think about West Virginia and Bob Huggins and the experience in the past and his network base in Cincinnati. That could be difficult to overcome a little bit, but Ole Miss is definitely in there, and what he is a 6'5", shot-making, two-guard, good length, decent athlete. But, you know, at the end of the day, we all know the value of a shooter is so important in today's game. And that's what makes him why he's so heavily prioritized this spring and why he would be a very, very good piece for either program.
You kind of feel like it's West Virginia there?
You know, I'm not saying they're going to win it out. I'm just saying, you know, the connections that Huggins has, when push comes to shove, it's difficult to overcome.
Okay. Two guys in the 2020 class, and then I'm going to ask just a big picture thing, like I said. Both named Robinson, no relation that I'm aware of. Sean Robinson, who's out in Arizona. I know that a lot of connections to the Ole Miss staff. He's a major priority. But he's a major priority for a lot of people. He put out a top 12 the other day, and Ole Miss was in it. And then the other is Chance Robinson from my neck of the woods in North Louisiana. What do you sort of hear early about those two kids? How impactful could they be in a college program when you project them a year out?
Yeah, you know, they're both nationally recognized prospects here at Rivals.com. Sean's a dual sport athlete, has a chance to play football as well in college. From the Midwest, that whole thing is still, the process for him is still ongoing. You know, he's listed as a top 12, but, you know, he's still some time away from making a decision. But Ole Miss is definitely in there. But Chance, same way. I think Ole Miss has done a great job of recruiting him. LSU was heavily involved with him as well prior to the whole, if you want to call it the Will Wade Safu. You know, a variety of SEC schools are in there, but Chance is a 6'2", 6'3", combo type that's just tough as nails. Kind of fits the Kermit Davis ethos of what he likes in a ball player or in a backcourt player. So I think they've definitely done the grunt work with both those guys.
So we talked about Bryce Drew for a minute being gone. We've mentioned Will Wade. I can't imagine that he's going to make it at LSU, but who knows? There's no news there yet. There's openings at Texas A&M. There's an opening at Arkansas. There's an opening at Alabama. A lot of volatility in a really good league right now. Just from a coaching vacancy standpoint, with some of the names that you hear being tossed around, Kelvin Sampson, Buzz Williams, Thad Matta's being talked about with Alabama some as you and I have this conversation. How much could coaching changes impact recruiting races around the SEC?
Oh, it's important, man. I mean, it's very, very important. It just changes the landscape in a way of, you know, who's available, who you can get. You know, let's say Arkansas gets a Kellen Sampson, and let's say Buzz Williams goes to Virginia Tech. But those are two heavy hitting, respected coaches.
You meant Texas A&M, right, on Buzz?
Yeah. I apologize.
No, it's okay.
Those are two heavily respected coaches that have great ties to the Deep South already. And as well, it kind of changes the dynamic down there in Texas with how much talent is down there and how fluid things are at Texas, at TCU. You know, and Calvin leaving for a school like Arkansas, let's say it happens like that. The pool of prospects and who you can and cannot get if you're an Ole Miss or whoever it is, it's heavily dependent on who the coaches are, right? And that's going to be the one of the more intriguing things the next 2, 3, 4, 5 months, especially for the SEC schools, is, you know, who gets the Vanderbilt job? Who gets Alabama, Arkansas? Who gets A&M? What happened to LSU? It's going to be very, very fluid here. And I think, you know, the 2020 class, how that kind of plays out, and with the four prospects that are available, a guy that Ole Miss might be a favorite for, they could go from being a favorite to having no chance of a kid, just like that. So it's definitely one thing to keep an eye on in the next few weeks.
When you look at those open jobs, which one or two stand out as jobs that if you're a coach, that's a sleeping giant, or that's a diamond, that's a job you want? Which ones of those jobs do you look at and go, man, that's a tougher job than people think?
Yeah, I think the first job that I would, if I was a coach or a prospective coach, was A&M. I mean, the amount of money there. You know, you have a unique style because you're the lone SEC program that is located in a talent-rich state, that's Texas. And then you have the fan support, the backing, and even more so the financial backing. I mean, it's the wealthiest athletic department in America now. So if that doesn't get you excited, if you're a college basketball coach who could take that job, I don't know what does. You know, difficulties of a job, you know, people would say Vanderbilt, but I think you have a unique style with the academic thing there. You know, I think Arkansas, yeah, it could be difficult, but, you know, you have kind of like the whole state to yourself, right? I think it's Alabama, honestly. I think you're second fill to football, always. I don't care if Nick Saban's there or not. It's not easy being the, you know, not the number one sport on campus.
Yeah, I agree with
and
you.
And far from it, right? I mean,
yeah.
Now, granted, all the schools we're talking about, you're not the first, not the number one sport. But Alabama, let's face it, it's the Bible of football there. You know, and the fan support has been good lately, but it's not tremendous. You know, the state of Alabama is decent for talent, but you have Auburn right down the street that's kind of rolling right now with Bruce Pearl. And you have a state next to you in Georgia, a city of Atlanta, where Tom Crean started to get going there. So I would say Alabama is probably the most difficult one out there right now.
How is the league viewed now by recruits? I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I can remember kids kind of subtly saying, yeah, I'm not going to play in the SEC. I want to play in a league where there's better competition. I want to play in a league where there are more NCAA tournament teams. I mean, you project ahead to next season. You've got seven teams that went to the tournament this year. I guess four that are still alive going into the Sweet 16 round. You've got probably Buzz Williams at A&M, maybe Kelvin Sampson at Arkansas. I don't know what happens with LSU, but, I mean, you know, maybe Johnny Dawkins at Vanderbilt. I mean, this is fast becoming a very much a big boy league. I'm curious if that's sort of the vibe that you get talking to kids now when they evaluate SEC schools up against some of the ACC and Big Ten and, you know, Big East schools that perennially have kind of stolen the kids that some of the SEC schools wanted to get.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of piqued some guys' interest for sure. There's no longer a discrepancy between the SEC and, like you said, the ACC or Big Ten. And, you know, what you're seeing at Tennessee and, you know, now what you're seeing at, you know, a program like Auburn, where, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago it was Kentucky and Florida and everyone else. And now there's a group of 6, 7, or 8 programs that are, they can compete for the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, like we're seeing now. And also I think some of these kids want to get a shot at a program like Kentucky, whether they feel slighted or whatever it is. I think the idea of going to the same conference as a Kentucky and having the chance to play against those guys and beat those guys, it's also a unique sell for the SEC. But I think what the SEC has done the past 4 or 5 years with improving the facilities, improving the non-conference schedule, as you said, infiltrating better and more respected coaches into it, it's gone a long way. And it's definitely piquing the interest of some of these top-tier high school prospects. And that's why you see Tennessee build up to what it is, Auburn build up to what it is, even Ole Miss. You know what Kermit's doing the past 8, 9, 10 months it's impressive. So SEC is definitely trending upward, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Tennessee. I haven't heard this directly from anybody at Ole Miss, but there are some direct correlations. Older coach with some experience at other places, and I think if you're an Ole Miss fan, you sort of watch the model at Tennessee, the way that Rick Barnes built it, and say that's probably the path that Kermit Davis is sort of trying to follow.
There's no doubt. I mean, why not? You know, the proof's in the pudding there with what Rick Barnes did. Now, granted, Rick Barnes hit on about 6, 7, 8 dudes that were slighted or under the radar or underrated to an extreme, and hit on all those guys. Whether it was a Grant Williams or Admiral Schofield, those guys don't come around often. And Rick Barnes struck gold more than once. So that's difficult to do. But it definitely is in the mold that you want to build a program if you're not going to be landing these top 25 guys consistently.
Last thing, who's in the Final Four on Sunday night?
You know what? I got to go with Duke. I got to go with Gonzaga. I'm going to stick with, you know, all my four schools are still in it, but I think I had Tennessee in it, but they're scaring me a little bit. They can't hold on to these leads. I think Virginia is mentally disciplined enough, mentally tough enough to stick with it. They'll pull that out. And you know what? I had Auburn over UNC 2 weeks ago. I'm going to stick with it.
Did you really?
I did. You know,
wow.
I was there. I was there in Nashville 2 weeks ago for the SEC tournament, and you know, I saw what Jared Harper and those guys did, man, and how talented and well-rounded they are at shooting the ball and controlling the tempo and defending. And you got a guy like Bruce Pearl who's really coaching it well right now. It's hard to go against what they're doing. So, you know, I think they're going to beat those guys, UNC, as long as they control the tempo and slow it down a little bit when they can and kind of withstand Kobe White's aggressive abilities. I think they pull it out. You know, it all depends then on P.J. Washington. Is he healthy enough? Can they get by Houston? You know, I think they get by Houston. But you know what? Auburn versus Kentucky, what it was, Kentucky being by 20 last time, I think Kentucky pulls it out. I do. And, you know, I could see Virginia playing Gonzaga in the finals. Is that what it would be? I have Gonzaga winning it all. That's all I know. So
yeah, I think you've got the bracket right. Yeah. You know, the way that Auburn destroyed Tennessee that day in Nashville was kind of
a little mind blowing.
It really was. It was eye opening. It was one of those days where, you know, because you had to turn the volume off because Vital was screaming, and you just sat and watched it, and you said, "This is a good Tennessee team. This Tennessee team beat Kentucky 24 hours ago. Well, this is a legit Tennessee team that could go a long way." And Auburn was making them look like a middle of the pack SEC team. It was remarkable.
They just don't do many things poor. Auburn. It's kind of astonishing that they would hit that big of a hurdle in SEC play with how many weapons they have. You know, I know the Austin Wiley injury didn't help, but still, I mean, they have so many guys. They can go big, they can go small, they can run, they can play in the half court, they can defend, they can make shots pretty well. They check a lot of boxes.
They really do. Well, hey, I really appreciate the time. That was enlightening stuff. Always good to kind of get a catch-up on recruiting from somebody who's out and sees the kids and talks to the kids and knows what's going on. So really appreciate the time and hope to do it again soon.
I appreciate you having me so much.
That's Corey Evans. Corey, thanks. Our thanks to Corey for his time today talking some basketball recruiting. Should be a pretty interesting 3 or 4 weeks around Ole Miss and the SEC as it pertains to basketball recruiting. So that does it for our second show of the week here on the Soft Verbal Podcast. We'll be back next week with some recruiting content, working on a couple of different things. So don't want to overpromise anything. We'll get to it, next week. Until then, have a great weekend. Thanks again to everyone at Dead Soxy. Thanks again to Corey Evans, and we'll talk to you later. Enjoy your weekend. Take care.